Okay, so welcome to Multisport Media. You are joined today by myself, Jack, and Luke, and our host today, our guest today is the one and only, possibly, potentially, probably is, the one of the best ultra runners in the world right now. And that is Mr. Thomas. I'm going to call you Thomas Evans because I feel like that's what your mum would have called you when you're a naughty Thomas.
Only if I'm bad, yeah.
Thomas Evans. So who is Tom Evans and why have we got him on? Well, Tom Evans, just a very short rundown of where it all started for Tom. 2017 in the ultra running world. He went out to the Marathon des Sables, the 251K desert race ultra, and came third. Bearing in mind, Tom had barely run at this point, came third. Best European time ever, I do believe. The following year, then went 2018 to my favourite place in the world, Mont Blanc, and did the 101K CCC UTMB. Same year, also took a first at Costa Rica Coastal Challenge, I do believe, and the South Downs 50, I believe, as well. And then, obviously, last year, 2019... went to that small little race called the Western State 100 and came third in a time of 14:59. I think that's the best ever a Brit's done over there, I do believe.
Quickest American time.
Quickest, right, okay, non-American time. And that all started in a pub. Now, all I've really got the burning question to ask is, what were you drinking that day?
So I used to be a sort of proper real ale man back in the day. The first pint's always got to be the local ale.
Okay.
So I'm trying to think where we were. Maybe we might have been in Chiswick or somewhere sort of outskirts of London. So it would have been sort of some micro brewery, very fashionable, probably not very nice beer. But yeah, as I think all good, there's a lot of good and a lot of bad decisions are made in the pubs. There's very little middle ground, I think. That's have led me to leave the military and become a full-time athlete, whatever that means. And I'm sort of still trying to figure out exactly what that is.
And if you were to go to that same pub now, Tom, what would you order?
Either a soda lime or sort of that water, please.
How you've changed in 3 years.
So embarrassing. It is embarrassing.
So before then, so Tom, obviously we know a lot of people know about that. People have followed you, especially the last couple of years when they start to see you winning these things and doing really well and hitting podiums. But before that, just tell me the truth. Where were you with your running career? Because, I mean, I've got into running quite recently. I say quite recently. I'm 32 now. The last 5 years for me, I'd like call myself a runner. Before then, it was just the odd 5K, 10K, and I wasn't a runner per se. I know if you run, you're a runner, but where really were you? I mean, what would you have called yourself? Just a fitness person? I know you're in the army and obviously did boot camps and army style training, but what would you have classed yourself sat in that pub there?
So I think if I take it like in a step even further back, when I was at school, I was really sporty. And I was good at running. Like I'd always win the school cross country and I'd do sort of athletic or track and field in the summer. But only did that because I was useless at cricket. Kind of just had to do it because I wouldn't have made a team and I needed to get out of some form of academics. I ran at school and then joined the army but rugby was always my main sport. So I pretty much just run to stay fit. And then I then did get pretty into CrossFit, I think just because I enjoyed the challenge and I liked testing myself. Like going to the gym, for me, it was great and I enjoyed it. But kind of similar to now, like I have to have goals and I have to know why I'm doing something because I don't have a filter that's just train easy. Like I love training, don't get me wrong, but I wouldn't think like, oh, it's a nice afternoon, I'm just gonna go for a little run or a little bike ride or something. I'm doing this and it serves a purpose. And for me, going to the gym being like, oh sweet, I want a six pack or I want my arms to be bigger, that just wasn't a good enough reason to go. So I found with CrossFit and with functional fitness that one, it was super relatable to the military. And you see so many people now in the CrossFit world doing workouts with a military style weighted vest on. That's what we wore a lot of the time in the military. So it kind of made sense, like, right, well, this is what they're sort of doing, military style training to become an athlete. And I think for being an elite in the military, you are almost an athlete at the same time. Like you do need to be really fit. And yeah. I think that's really important. So yeah, I think, yes, I did the occasional sort of 10K, and I actually did a Spartan OCR race once because it was a challenge. I enjoyed challenging myself. I liked sort of going to, when I was in the army, sort of based just outside London, it was right, go to Richmond Park and run for a couple of laps or go and do these things. And I always liked challenging myself. And I did the first ever triathlon I did was an Ironman distance. For some reason, it's a quote Ross Edgley said once was sort of be naive enough to sign up to something, but then stubborn enough not to stop. And I think that sort of just summarized exactly sort of me as an athlete. Mm. And it's getting started with when I started running, it's like, oh, if sort of someone had decided, oh, they wanted to start taking running a bit more seriously, your first ultra marathon probably wouldn't be Marathon des Arts. You'd probably pick something a little bit closer to home, something maybe not quite as expensive,
and something quite as long.
Yeah, it's achievable.
I just thought, right, well, I've been told, and it's been documented, this is the toughest race in the world. Like, why would I want to do the second toughest race in the world? Because I didn't do it to finish on the podium. I did it to test myself and to push my limits and to see where they were. And it just so happened to be that my best was very nearly good enough to be the best, which was a complete shock. Genuinely went to the race sort of hoping that I'd finish in the top 20, top 30, but I didn't really know what that meant. Yes, I'd have loved to be in the top Brit, but I had no idea. I'd never run. Pretty much every day that we ran was the furthest that I had ever run.
That is crazy, man. That's crazy.
Before we delve further into that, Tom, there's one thing that just kind of come up then, a mindset. Now, having that kind of mindset to have a goal and really achieve it and push yourself through to see that goal through to an end, was that something that you had before you went into the army, or do you think that was something that you've developed while being in the army in that kind of environment?
I think yes to both. Yes, I think it is innate. I've always enjoyed challenging myself. Like I've got a big extended family and I'm the youngest. I've got stepbrothers who are 10 years older than me, and I would always want to race against them, whether it was on the bikes or running or arm wrestling or whatever it was. I always wanted to be competitive, but they're 10 years older. So if you imagine the difference in physicality between an 11-year-old and 21-year-old, it's pretty huge. But even at that age, I was beating them running and biking. So I think it's always been there, but I think actually setting the goals and having structure to the why and having structure to the motivation was definitely forged in the military. And it was always there. And would it, and I think with a lot of these things, sort of a lot of people have a lot of ability, but it's almost like coaxing that ability out of someone and finding a way to get the best out of someone. And I think for me, the military was the perfect way to do it. Like I needed that structure. So as a professional athlete in a sport that's not governed by a national governing body, I have a lot of free rein on my training. Yes, I've got a coach, but he's not here every day telling me exactly what to do. I do a lot of the training on my own. So it's very much, I could, especially now with COVID, like, oh, I could run at 9 o'clock or I could run at 11 o'clock. It doesn't really matter. Mm-hmm. But for me, I'm very much sort of the week before, I will write down the timings that I'm going to train and stick to it because I need that structure. And that structure and being able to have that is definitely something that I developed when I was in the military.
That's something that everyone could, that's just really interesting. That's something that everyone, even listen to this podcast, even if you're a weekend warrior and open waiver, you could take that and just use that. Like I coach as well. And I have the same issue. Like even if it's written down Tuesday's tempo, this is that, you tend to sit there. 10 o'clock goes by, you go, oh, it's all right, I'll go out at 12 o'clock. 12 o'clock comes, it's all right, I'll go out at 4 o'clock. 4 o'clock comes, has no point going out now. Mm-hmm. And you talk yourself throughout the day doing that. So maybe I need to start writing down, you will go out at 9 o'clock.
100%. I do it with everything from writing lists. Like you do it for your basic daily things, like going to the supermarket. You're not going to leave it to chance with what you go and eat. Like you're going to write everything down. So if you're serious about your fitness or with anything, you're serious about eating for a week, then you write these things down because it helps keep you accountable for it. If you don't keep yourself accountable, what if it starts raining? If you said you're going to go at 10 and then you change it to I'm going to go at 12, what if it starts heaving it down with rain at 11:45? You know, just think, I'll just do it tomorrow then.
That's exactly what happens.
I think then again, that's like a great point from thinking about the military point of view. There's so many great athletes that have come from a military background and they all seem to have a very similar kind of mindset, as in with training and with competing, it's get it done. They will do what needs to be done, really push themselves to go there. And you can see that from obviously yourself and other guys that have come from that background. But yeah, no, amazing kind of mental side of it that seems to be.
I think it's really interesting, and a quote that I use quite a bit, which I think is so true, is a professional athlete is training so they can perform their best when they're feeling their best. But as a professional soldier, you are training to perform your best when you're feeling your worst. And I think as an athlete, you are feeling your worst at the very end of a race. Mm-hmm. Where all the chips are down, anything can happen, but you still need to perform your best. So especially when you go into a race like ultra running or a sport like ultra running, that there'll be highs and there'll be lows, but there's a long race. It might take 15 hours, it might take 20 hours, it might take 6 days. You just need to perform your best when you're feeling horrendous. And I think that is definitely a military mentality, which can be a sort of a double-edged sword that, you've got a bit of a niggle, oh, I'm all right, I'm just going to crack on. It's definitely sort of balancing act that I'm sort of still yet to finalize.
You're still quite young, Tom, as well. I mean, how old are you now?
I am 28.
He's forgot how old he is. Brilliant. But that's still really young, especially in the ultra game. You know, you look some, especially from like Spartan and longer distance OCR athletes, they're sort of 45, 48, the good guys, you know, unless you're John Alban, who just wins everything. But past that, do you know what I mean? It's an old man's game, I keep saying. It's fine. It's old man's game. You're still really young. And like you say, you're probably learning that every time you go out. Every time you go out, you're learning something new about your body, and it's knowing your body, like with injury, you know, it's knowing, is it a niggle that's going to cause me to not to run tomorrow or train tomorrow? Or is it a niggle that I know that's mainly because all pain is felt in the head. It's not actually in the body, which is even weirder. It's a mindset thing, isn't it?
Which one of those races that you've done so far is the one that you've had to dig the deepest and bring out that mindset? Which one was the worst place you've gone to at an end of a race?
So it was the first race that I was sort of a full-time athlete for, I guess, that was the CCC in 2018. Mm-hmm. The Army basically gave me 3 months off to go and train. So I put absolutely everything into this race, a big training block, and trained as specifically as I could in the Alps for 2.5 months and got to the start line feeling amazing, being like, I've put so much into this. There's no way that I have to perform my best. And I put so much pressure on myself that I went through halfway and I think I was in ninth place and like 16 minutes back from the leader. And I had a bad stomach. I'd been sick. I couldn't keep any food down. I wasn't drinking. And it was very much for me, like, right, you've put so much effort into this, and so many other people around you have put so much effort into getting you to be in this place. You've just got to keep going. You've got to give it your all and hope that this will pass and you will start feeling better. And it got to the final climb that's probably got about 12 miles left to go. And then when you get to the top of the final climb, it's about 5 miles left. So it's sort of a 6-7 mile climb-ish. Mm-hmm. And it's very twisty and turny, and you can't really see anything. And at this point, I was in second place, but had no idea where the leader was. So it was literally just you are going to run the whole of this. No matter what your legs say, you're running every step of the way. Just don't give up. If you run the whole way, you'll catch him. And got to the, maybe with 400 meters left of the climb, and caught him. And he couldn't believe that I was going past. And I knew on the downhill bit, I've worked so hard for this. I know I'm throwing it away. And then in the last 5 miles, I put 6 minutes into him.
Jeez.
But that was purely physically, we were as fit as each other and our bodies could have done it. But at that point, it was just a mental game of, right, he's been overtaken. He's seen the victory being taken from him. He's lost it there mentally. Yeah. I knew he had lost it then mentally. And I knew that at that point, mentally, I know I had won. Physically, I didn't know what was going to happen on the downhill. You could have fallen. You could have done anything. But in my head, that was just such a huge mental victory. So yeah.
Did a massive smile come across your face, Tom, when you went past him? Did you, in your head, did you could not keep it like that? No. I know I've done it in a race when I've gone past and I've just a massive smile's come on my face, like knowing you've won the mental battle.
For me, it was just, I was sort of massively, massively playing mind games. Just
poker face.
Complete poker face. Didn't even look at him, just went straight past him.
Who was it? Can you remember?
A guy called Ming Qi. Chinese athlete, very, very good. I think this is the only race that he hasn't won in like 4 years.
Really?
I don't think he likes me very much, but
so he seriously pissed him off. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
For yourself, like Jack said, obviously you're very young, you're just kind of learning from this stage doing the CCC what being a professional athlete. You had those 3 months. Do you think it was kind of like that you had those problems in the race because you were such an early kind of professional athlete? Maybe you had put too much into those 3 months and then almost paid for it, but mentally pushed through?
100%. And I think that was a huge solo victory. And I think it was very much me biting off more than I could chew. Like, I went to this training camp on my own, no training partners, no physio support. I didn't have a psychologist. So yes, elite sport now and elite running is so much more than running. The psychology comes into it. The nutrition comes into it. The physio comes into it. The physiology comes into it. And at this point, at that point in my career, I was very much the more I run and the harder I train, the better I'm going to perform. And to a certain extent, that's true. Mm-hmm. But like I said earlier in the pod, it's very much a balancing act. And I think now, like, I've got a WhatsApp group with all of my team around me. So from soft tissue masseur to physiologist to physio to gait analysis to nutritionist to psychologist to physiologist. And you look on that group and that's what I was really missing in sort of 2017 till beginning of 2020. Like, I literally got it sorted during lockdown. I was like, right, I need this group. I need this virtual group around me.
Can I come in that group, please?
It's a really interesting group. I think I'm just to keep screenshotting it. And if and when I ever write a book, I literally could just transcript this because it's
gold.
It's gold. Like, there's nothing. Yeah, there's nothing like secretive on it, but it's very, it's like someone's training. It's basically a training diary.
Yeah.
So like from this morning's run, for example, like this was for the run, it was like, it was 5:40 per mile average, a fasted run, and it's the lowest my heart rate's ever been off a fasted run. And it's the question we're asking is like, why did that happen? Because yes, the performance is great, but actually let's go into it. Let's analyze it. And the amount that you can do now with sort of sports wearables and things is incredible. Like, yes, listening to your body is more important, but actually it can tell you so much more with things. And I think it's something where ultra running hasn't necessarily been very good. And a lot of ultra runners would just race and race and race and sort of not really be that scientific about training. But then you compare it to like an elite marathoner who races 2, maybe 3 times a year. And I'm like, well, why are these guys racing so little, whereas we are racing so much? But whenever they race, they really put it out the bag. I'm like, well, I'd so much rather just be able to race 2, 3, maybe 4 times a year, race really well, but then be sensible just so I can do this in the long term. And I think all of that data sort of helps to back that up and sort of helps to keep me consistent and to perform my best when it matters. Because I could have, in a year, I could have 349 amazing training days, but I could have a couple of shocking days. And those days would be the ones that matter. Because, if you DNF 3 races in a year, if I DNF 3 races next year in the 3 main races, I'd probably go into 2022 without a single sponsor.
And what's really interesting is, I think if I'm right in saying, you bought your first ever Garmin wearable watch in the airport on the way to MDS. Is that right?
Yeah.
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, I've been Garmin from there, and I'm lucky enough to be a sponsored Garmin athlete now, which is incredible. And I think I think just some stories like that and truths like that are just make you sort of realize that, I think a lot of people think that a lot of professional athletes sort of, it just happens overnight. Mm-hmm. And in some cases it does. And so I guess with me, it kind of did. Like, I look back at the history of it and it's like, well, it's now quite obvious that I should have got into running and long distance running from earlier, because the talent was there. It was just a bit of a jigsaw puzzle of getting the right pieces in the right place at the right time. And now it's all sort of all worked out. But yeah, I think it humanizes these elite athletes that you haven't got to be an elite athlete or a professional athlete to perform really well.
Yeah.
Have you got your Garmin on now, Tom?
I do. I have a one on now.
Out of interest, let's play a little game. Let's go to your training status. What does your training status currently have you at?
Productive.
Productive. And then if you enter that, what's your VO2 on the Garmin, if you don't mind me asking?
84.
Okay. Then let's go all the way through to your predicted race predictor. 5K?
Wait a sec.
It's probably more than what it actually should be, but...
I'm going to try and find that.
Should keep flicking through. I don't know what watch you got. Which one have you got on?
9.5.
Oh, the new one. Nice. Nice watch. That's what Lou's got.
Pretty good watch.
You have to go to the VO2 max.
Yeah, so not as...
As quick as you think, probably.
Well, not as quick as I ran. So 5K, 14:41.
Yeah.
And I ran
13:41.
Yeah. 10K, 31:09. I think I went through 10K in 32 this morning on an easy run.
I should have asked this question, should I?
Marathon 109. I ran a half in 103 2 weeks ago.
Right.
Marathon 2:28, and I'll hopefully run 2:10 on the 26th of March next year.
Nice.
Tom, before we move forward and talk about those races that you've just mentioned that you've done this year, just want to hit back on the point that you were saying about elite athletes having like a team and something around them. I think a lot of people see athletes having good performance and results, but think, oh, they've got they've got it all behind and they've got that team built up and ready. It's interesting for you to say that you've just got it done this year. Do you think that knowing that and having that in place now is going to really give you the grounding for like a 2021 exploding even more onto bigger races and bigger scenes.
100%. I think it can be very lonely being an endurance athlete. Like, I spend a lot of time on training camps and when I'm out training on my own. So it can be really difficult. And having that team around you, I think, is vital. But then also, like, I'm not an expert in nutrition. I'm not an expert in physiology. I'm not an expert in signing lucrative sponsorship deals. Like, get people around you who are the experts.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's just going to make, it's going to make my life much easier. And for me to be able to perform at my very best. And yeah, I think it's so important to have that team around you. Like, I think, guess what lockdown's taught us is, like, who do you really want in your corner? Like, who is genuinely going to back you when things go wrong? Who do you want to support you and to, yeah, to have your back? And I think it has taken lockdown back to realize. And like, you go at, like, you look at, like, your old mates from school, like, how many of them were just, they were just there because they were there, and how many of them you actually still speak to. And I think it's, yeah, and it's the same thing, like, when people win the lottery and they get sort of all their sort of old friends sort of coming out and like, oh yeah, remember this, la, yeah. And it's like, well, who are your real, I say, mates? And I think in sport, it's like, who is your team? Who do you really want in your corner, and what works best for you? Because what will work for one person may not work for someone else.
And especially for an endurance sport, because like you say, there's a lot of hours put into training on a bike, in a road, in the legs, in the volume, you know, you, as well as your, like, is it your wife? Sorry, Tommy, you married?
No, I don't.
Not yet, sorry. Your partner. So just having the right person, even at home. So like, when you come in from your shitty run and you want to sit on the sofa and eat Ben and Jerry's and watch Netflix, because we know you do, Tom, you know, yeah. If that happens, do you know what I mean? She's just there to go, it's all right, don't worry, it's always tomorrow. Or come on, Tom, stop being an idiot. Get out there and go again. It's having that right person there as well, isn't it?
100%. I'm so lucky with Soph. So Soph and I have been together for coming up to 2 years, and she's a professional triathlete. And so she gets the running. She would never claim to be an expert of ultra distance running, but she understands it enough. And I would be exactly the same place for triathlon. I understand it enough, but I'm not an expert. So it's so nice to know that we will both have good sessions, we will both have bad sessions. And I think it's really healthy to have someone who understands that actually I might need to go, or I will be going away in January for 6 weeks to go on a training camp. And I then may get back, and the day before I get back, she may go away on the training camp. So it ends up being 4 months without seeing each other. But we know that this is the life that we've chosen. We knew this was going to happen at the beginning. And yeah, I think just that level of understanding to be like, right, this is what it is. And we then make the most of having time when we're at home, and we really do make the most of it. But yeah, you're going to have, as a professional athlete or as a weekend warrior, you're going to have good days, you're going to have bad days. And having that right network around you, and if that right network has got to start at home. And a lot of people say, oh, like, how would you balance it? But I think it's that buy-in, it's getting that investment from your family. So if you are going out for a long run or a long training session, do a point-to-point run from home to your wife or your husband's favorite cafe, and just get them to meet you there and buy them breakfast or something. Because there's just got to be that buy-in, because otherwise they're just going to get super annoyed with you the whole time, and training's then just going to become an effort, because you're going to be annoying people by going out and doing something you love. So you've got to try and get them involved as best as you can.
Yeah, find that mutual thing that you can both enjoy. I like that idea. So do you like being, so obviously you said you came into MDS sort of expecting somewhere top 20, whatever, obviously come out with a third, go to CCC, come out with first. Then you go and finish off 2018 with two at the Costa Rica and then the South Downs 50. So by this point, people are going, hold on, this Tom Emmons is pretty good. Do you like going into races like knowing you're the one to beat, or would you rather be the one sat at the pack chasing?
I think it's a really interesting one. I think my style of racing is such that I won't go out crazy, crazy hard at the beginning. I'll ease into it. So it'd be very unlikely at sort of halfway to be in the lead, but you're then risking, or did I sort of go too easy for the first half? It's still a long way. I like pressure. I think I perform better when I'm under pressure. I think that's definitely stemmed from sort of playing team sports that have got a. I'm so time orientated that I love data. I love analysing my data, and I think for team sports and for sort of races on the track that are like an hour time trial, like for me, I thrive off that. I like that pressure. I like that countdown. Mm-hmm. And like I try and replicate that in races where there's maybe not a timer, but it's a distance race, and sort of whether you're ticking off the miles or the places or whatever you're doing. But yeah, I like that pressure. I thrive off that pressure. But then again, I also like being a little bit of an underdog. So yeah, I think it really does depend. I like proving people wrong, but I think. It's a huge honor to have that target on your back. And yeah, it's sort of part of the territory, part of the game, I guess. And yeah, but for me, it doesn't necessarily worry me. I think you just got to, for me, I would still approach it in the same way that I'm very sort of inwards looking during a race. Other people know what they want to do. I'm going to, if my best is good enough to be the best, then that's mega and I'll win. But if it's not good enough to be the best and someone else has a better day or performs better or is genuinely better, then fair play to them. All I can do is give my best. And if that's good enough, then great. And if it's not, then back to the drawing board and see where we can go from there.
Yeah. So Jack's mentioned some of the big ultras you've done. And obviously you said then about being an underdog. In 2020, you've raced some completely different races than ultra distances. You've gone almost the opposite way to doing 5Ks, 5,000 meters on a track and a couple of half marathons this year. How has that been slightly different from a mental perspective, from doing something almost totally different than you're used to, and also from like a performance perspective by being maybe the underdog or kind of a one to watch? Because you've had some phenomenal results. The podium 5K, like we mentioned before, you did 13:41. You did the British Championship, 5,000 meters on the track, 14:14. Coastal half marathon over in Ireland, 63:15. And then the World Half Marathon Championships, which I believe was in Poland. You did 63:14, which all of those are phenomenal times. How did you find doing those races this year?
I think I love them. Like I said earlier in the pod, like I need to have a goal, I need to be able to set myself something to look forward to. And I think during lockdown, that's sort of been one of the harder things to do. So when races started to look like they may or may not happen, for me, it was just trying to find something that I can test myself and I can challenge myself in. And trail races sort of still aren't really happening because I think they just require so many more people, so much more support, they're a little bit more remote. So you need the people for them. Whereas with a half marathon on an out and back course, it's sort of pretty straightforward and it's pretty easy to keep it all contained and sort of inward looking. So yeah, I think for me, it was sort of changing that idea and that then massively changed my goals for the year, because this definitely wasn't the year that I was planning on having, but it's the year that has ended up happening. And so I've tried to make the most out of it. And yes, I love going into it. And I just love that every article written about me still refers to me sort of as that ultra runner and everything, which is great. And for me, like, I love running. It sounds really sad, but I love running. I don't care if it's 100 miles or it's 1 mile. Like, I genuinely love nothing more than going out training hard and racing. And I guess for me, like, I kind of want to show people that you don't have to pigeonhole yourself into oh yeah, I run 10Ks, or oh yeah, I'm a marathoner, or whatever. Like, I think it's so important sort of that people can balance and people can juggle. Like now I've competed for Team GB in trail running, mountain running, road running, cross country. The only thing I haven't competed for Team GB for is track.
Do it. Challenge.
Dude, if I could, I would. I'm just, the track life is not for me. I will try. I want
hurdles.
Try. I think it's really cool, a cool thing to be able to do. And I think, yeah, this year it's been great. And I think also I've almost sort of gone back to, if you sort of use a CrossFit analogy, sort of I've gone back to basics, I've gone back to fundamentals. And I've sort of tried to improve sort of technique and everything. So now that when I then do go up next year and sort of step up in distance again, I'm starting sort of my foundations and my building blocks are at a completely different place to where they were in 2018, 2019. Which I think is really exciting. I'm incredibly excited about getting back to the trails, but I'm kind of really in no rush because I can see my progression now. And so for the couple of long runs that I've done on the trails, on routes that I've done before, on a sort of 15-mile trail run, running it now, I'm about 9 minutes quicker than I've ever been before, which is pretty significant. Having not trained specifically for the trails. So yeah, I think it's, for me, it's really exciting that this sort of basic training that I've been doing is sort of hopefully going to propel me forwards in my own performances, which I think is really exciting.
So if we were to write a blog tomorrow, Tom, what would you call yourself?
A runner.
Just a runner?
Yeah, like I'm a professional runner. Yes, my social media handles are all about ultra running and everything, but I've kind of shot myself in the foot. But now I've sort of slightly built a brand around that. And actually, like, ultra running very much is where I want to perform my best. I do want to be the very, very best at that. And I think it's sort of, what does success look like? Like, I'm very competitive and I love winning. I'm not necessarily a bad loser, but I really like winning. So that winning a race for me is way better than finishing 10th, but maybe getting more money for finishing 10th. Like, I'm just not financially motivated. I just love the feeling of winning. What does success look like? So finishing 12th in the best I may ever do in a sort of major marathon race, I might finish in the top 15. That'd be amazing. Or if I was to go to the Olympics for a marathon, I might finish in the top 20, top 30. That would be amazing. But for these, and that's what success would look like. That would be the gold medal equivalent. But actually in trail running, there are these races that I want to go when I genuinely believe that I can be the best in. And I want to set course records, and I want to do sort of all these big things. And for me, that's within the sport that I love the most. Sort of whenever I want to go for an easy run, it's all sort of for an enjoyable thing. Like, I'm not like, oh, I'll just sort of go on the road and do this. It's always like, I'll just drive. I'm happy to drive an hour or two sort of into the trails to have a nice run. So yeah, the trails is very much where my heart is. And running the long distance, I genuinely think I'm better at it, but that doesn't mean that that's all I'm going to run at. So I know what my weaknesses are and I want to improve my weaknesses, but like, so I think all in all, that's then going to improve my ultra running, which is the end goal. And like you said earlier in the pod, like, I'm young, I've got time to, yes, I'm getting older, but I've got time to improve these basics. And if I improve these basics and these fundamentals, then when I go back to my main discipline, then fingers crossed, I'll be better.
Say, like Jack said, writing a blog, what would your title be? You've said runner. I think the tagline underneath would be the most versatile runner at the moment.
I can't think of any other athlete. I mean, obviously we're quite close to John Alban, and we know that John Alban's pretty good at, you know, 5K, 3K in the OCR world. So yeah, I can't think of another athlete. I mean, Killian Jornet's just done a 10K, hasn't he, quite quick, but past that, I don't know if I know any other athletes that I can think of that would give you a run for your money, Tom.
No, I think we had a saying sort of back at when I was in the army, sort of, you may be quicker at running than me, you may be able to bench press more than me, but guaranteed you can't do both.
Yeah.
And I think that's maybe not with the bench anymore, but I think, yeah, for me, it's I want to be as good as I possibly can from a mile to 100 miles. And yes, there are going to be people who may be quicker than me at 100 miles. There may be people who are quicker than me, or there definitely will be people who are quicker than me at a mile. But actually, I want to be able to do them all because, like I said earlier, I just love it. I absolutely love it. And I thrive off training and I thrive off racing.
If you go on Google, Tom, and type in Tom Evans races, racing, whatever, do you know what your very first ever recorded time and race is?
No,
we do. I'm putting you on the spot. I appreciate that. So Luke found it out. It was actually a park run you did in 2012. Was that right, Luke?
Eastbourne Park run, yeah. 2012,
1701. Pretty quick. That's still a really good time.
That is.
I'll be happy.
People will be happy with that.
Yeah.
And then I was going to say, I don't know if Luke's going to allude to it now. You've mentioned it earlier in the podcast. Was that Spartan? No, obviously. We are Spartan athletes ourselves, me and Luke. And did you race that same race, Luke?
No, I raced the day before.
I've actually raced you, Tom. We've actually shared a same race together at Windsor 2016, yeah. That beast course. That was actually my first ever OCR race. So for yours. I mean, you came second, I came 13th. But so my question to you is, like, you've always been quite a good runner. You said here you love running. You did that in 2016, which before MDS. Why didn't you at that point ever go, do you know what? Fuck, this is awesome. Why not do Spartan? Did you not enjoy it, or was it just not something you could see doing?
I loved it. I enjoyed it, but because I hadn't done any research about what the obstacles or anything were, I got so many faults, penalty. So I did so many burpees. So the guy who won, I can't remember.
Tristan Steen, who is
very, very good, but he would do really well on the exercises, the obstacles. I would then catch him and take over him on the run. So it was just a game of cat and mouse for the whole thing.
How many burpees did you do? Do you remember?
I reckon on over half of the. I remember the first one.
That's embarrassing. Okay, 13th.
I was so useless. The first one was a kettlebell that you had to pull up on a rope.
Yeah.
I had absolutely no idea that there were different sized kettlebells for what.
Oh, you went to the ladies' one.
I just went to the first one, not thinking, oh, this one's going to be lighter. And pulled out. I was like, oh, this is all right. It's not that bad. So I did it. And then at the end, they're like, you used the wrong one. I'm like, oh, can I just go use the other one then? They're like, no, you've got to do your burpees. And
that's harsh.
20 burpees or however many it was. And I was wrecked after it. But then got to the running bit and I was like, well, this is easy. So I was like, well, just take out the obstacles and keep the running.
So that year was the last year they used the Great Windsor Park. That was actually a really nice route, I thought.
Really,
they moved it away from there after that, and it's been rubbish since. But hopefully they're going back to that particular venue next year or the year after.
If they did, I'd go. 100%.
Would you? That's my next question. Would you do another Spartan?
Oh, 100%.
Right, okay. We're going to sort that out. We're going to get Tom Evans back on the Spartan.
I occasionally get invited to... I was invited to the Spartan World Championships because they invite sort of some random athletes along.
Yeah,
part of me would love to do it.
Here's a go then, Tom. Right, if you give me, I've got a training facility. Where are you? Are you Loughborough now?
Loughborough, yeah.
Okay, so I'm Ipswich. So it's not too far down the A14. if you would give me a couple of weeks just to show you how to do obstacles, because honestly, I think you would, with your strength base now and your running, I think once you know technique, you would smash it. You'd be fine. I actually think we could get you a top three position at the World Championships in Spartan. I really do think.
Honestly, I would absolutely love to.
I think we should do it. I think we should train Tom Evans on the obstacles for a couple of weeks.
This put into perspective the difference. So burpees, generally it's 30 burpees and missed obstacle. Generally they take between 1 to 2 minutes, depends how proficient you are. You only came second by 3 minutes and 17 seconds, which is outrageous, as you had multiple amount of burpees.
So I reckon I did somewhere between 250 and 300 burpees. When I say I was useless in the obstacles, I'm useless.
Yeah.
That's interesting, God.
Because a little birdie told me I actually raced Tahoe last year with John Abb, and John Abb and we shared a room. Well, he was in the room next to me, so he spent a lot of time in my room, and he was actually telling me that there was a little WhatsApp group going between UGB boys, and he was actually trying to talk into some of you guys to come and do in Spartan.
Yeah,
so I know he was talking about it.
Yeah, it's the seed has been sown.
You've lured you in.
Yeah, I definitely want to, because I think it really does interest me. And coming from a military background, like, it was all about technique on the obstacles, and they may look really daunting, but as soon as someone told you, like, this is how you do it, you're like, well, I didn't see that before, that's easy. So yeah, and I think now that the proper long ones do it interest me, but now coming from sort of more of a bit of a, not a speed background, but having worked on 5K and 10K, actually the shorter ones interest me as well. So yeah, I think for me, it's definitely somewhere that it's definitely something that I will do in the next couple of years. Once I've done a couple of running races that I think I would like to do without sort of fully run focused. And actually, I still think even if I did OCR once or twice, it would still be 99% run focused and just technique on the obstacles.
Yeah,
I think it's
Spartan is basically 95% running, 5% obstacles.
Very good trail running will get you a long way.
And what's good about especially OCR now, as it's growing, it's actually going to some amazing places in the world. So they tend to use ski resorts because it's the place that have got the best facilities. So you like Lake Tahoe, places like that. You get all Morzine. So you get some amazing venues. Dolomites, obviously, last year me and Luke went to. And even England now, they're using Wales. There's in Yorkshire for the first time this year. They're in Edinburgh. So they're picking some nice venues. So it tends to be quite a nice, if you have the mimbles to actually look up and look at the scenery. I mean, me and Luke did Morzine, and I don't think I can even tell you what Morzine looked like. And it's probably the most beautiful place in the world. And I, because my heart was through my mouth for most of the race, I don't think I even took in any of the scenery. All I remember is a bloody great big chain walking up a 40% hill. That's all I remember. But yeah.
But Tom, you mentioned then looking ahead to some big running races. Is there, what's the key races looking ahead that you really want to dial in? Have you got any in mind, or are you just still feeling it out?
Yes, I think for sort of medium term goals, the Team GB will host a Olympic marathon trial on the 26th of March next year. That's my next big focus. So everything now is focused towards the marathon. I'm doing everything that I can to be able to perform my best, and who knows, I'll roll the dice and see what happens. Which is really exciting. I'll massively be an underdog for that because I am a ultra runner. So we'll see. And then, after that, so there's a road ultra in South Africa called Comrades. I'd love to go there. I think it's a course that really suit my running style.
That's a pretty famous course. So are they doing the up or the down version?
Down next year. But coming off a marathon base, I think it's a really sensible thing to go into. And then there are a couple of other sort of short shorter trail races. Like I'd love to go do Marathon to Mont Blanc. I'd love to do next year. I'd love to do Transvolcania. I don't know if I'll do anything really, really long next year. I guess we'll just see what happens. But yeah, definitely want to go to UTMB and run UTMB. Definitely got unfinished business at Western States. So yeah, pretty much every sort of big name ultra race. But like I said earlier, you can't do everything. You can't do everything in the same year. So things have got to be spread out. So it's just sort of finding the right time and going into a training block, a specific training block for a specific race in the best possible place. So would going into a training block for a 100-mile mountain race be the best idea coming off a flat marathon training block? No. But would going into Comrades from that? Yes. And then going to Transvolcania from that? Yes, that works perfectly. So yeah, I think we'll see how sort of just who knows what the world's going to look like next year. So I think it's just sort of being as flexible as possible. And if I can't sort of have any big races, then sort of just trying to find some small local races. And there are some great races in the UK. So maybe my focus will be here and I might sort of look to do a fastest known time, maybe sort of West Highland Way or South Downs Way or sort of Pennine Way or whatever it may be. Or Bob Graham round or sort of something like that. All that stuff sort of still really interests me. So yeah, I think sort of just see what happens sort of in the next 6 months and then hopefully be in a better position to be able to say like, right, this is what I'm going to do, rather than what I've done for the last couple of years is come sort of November, December, have all my ducks lined up in a row, like, right, these are the exact races I'm going to do. And for the year, it was a couple of days of my life, just which I'm never going to get back, just planning races, speaking to race directors, which obviously they've not happened. And I realize it's a sort of proper first world problem, not being able to race, because at the end of the day, it's just racing, but it's also my job. So yeah, it's been a frustrating year, but I think I'm sort of just staying positive and trying to sort of, I definitely am seeing the benefits of having a year at home.
No, definitely.
You seem the right sort of person to ask this question, Tom. So what's your biggest tips for any listeners out there that obviously getting into running or OCR or what have they doing, like for training in England? Because obviously what you do requires, especially some of these races I'm looking here on this list, you know, they are big races, mountain races, trail races. You live in Loughborough. How the hell do you get the correct training in living in Loughborough? What, I mean, like, do you have to literally dedicate going away for 2 or 3 weeks on camps? You know, do you have specific special routines or a source that you're not telling us about? Is it your treadmill in your pain cave? You know, what would you suggest would be the best way for someone getting a good mix of training in that sort of translates to these races?
I think the key word there is a mix. Like, it's very difficult. And if you look at sort of training principles, specificity is a key training principle. And you want to train as specifically as you can for a race. So for me, my build-ups are very specific. So if I look at a race, for example, if I look at CCC in 2018 if I look at Western States last year, I don't know, let's go to this year. So I raced in New Zealand at the beginning of this year in February. So I raced cross country in the UK, sort of up to 12 kilometers in November, December. First half of December, then second half of December, all of was based in Loughborough, running on the trails, just sort of getting a really good foundation, good building block, building sort of an aerobic engine. And then middle of January, I then went to New Zealand and had 3 weeks of specific training on the course, getting used to the surroundings and everything and the climbing. And then I raced out there. I think for me, sometimes it's very difficult to go to a place that you don't know and have a really good training block, because the sessions that you may have planned or your coach may have planned may not actually work in that location. So actually some of the times it's just easier to be at home to train for them. And I think for me, like, I definitely look to make my fitness gains in the UK while I'm doing sort of my base or foundation training, and then just top it up with specific training. When I'm in a trail block, I'll go, I see, yes, I'm in Loughborough, but I can still get quite a bit of climbing around here. Like the longest climb is probably 6-7 minutes. So not massive compared to some of these races compared to the Alps. If I drive 70 minutes, I'm in the middle of the Peak District. If I drive 2.5 hours, I'm at Snowdon. So it's really not that far. So sort of normally, yeah, in a trail block on a sort of Wednesday morning, I'll get up early. I'll drive to Snowdon, the train all day Wednesday on Snowdon, spend the night there, then all day Thursday training again, and then come back. So you get sort of two days a week, or do it over the weekend, but I'd rather do it midweek. It's just not normal. But then again, that's 2 out of 7 days. And a lot of people have said, oh, you could do so much better if you lived in the mountains the whole time. I'm like, yeah, well, you probably could train more specifically, but actually I can do a lot of sort of foundation training and then supplementary training in the gym or on the treadmill that makes it a little bit more specific. But I also get the sort of work-life balance right, because I like being at home. I've got 2 dogs at home. I like having my team around me at home. I like having physio. I like having a good gym. And I think those things are really beneficial to my performance, probably more so than putting myself up a mountain for 6 months.
I think as well, your training sort of seems to suit the average person, you know, the someone that has got to go to work or look after kids, because actually what you're suggesting there is when you go out, you're going out with purpose. And you're going out with the reason, you're not doing what we call junk miles. You know, like if you're going out and doing your 10 mile, the reason for this 10 mile is this. So it's a perfect use of that hour, 2 hours, 3 hours of time. And I think what a lot of people do, especially if they move to the mountains, they do end up just doing lots of time in the mountains and it's not very specific. Does that make sense? Whereas you're actually, when you do have, right, I've got to be up at 4 a.m. to drive to Snowdonia, that you've got to make the most of that time. So actually your training becomes much better because you're utilizing your time. That is your time. You know, you've got to spend it well, you know, and then that then subsequently, I suppose, makes you sleep better. You don't eat so much shit. You don't drink the beer, because actually you're going, what's the point in spending 5 hours in the trails if I'm just going to drink IPA and the beer all night, you know? That's a really interesting way of looking at it.
That's it. And I think if that's how... That's how I see my training. That's how I've always seen my training, and it's not rocket science. There's no hidden secrets. Or you do this, if you jump on your leg, right leg 3 times, and your left leg 5 times before you start a run, it's going to go really well. Like
cheat code.
I'll stop doing that then.
Sadly, it doesn't. I've tried it a lot, but it doesn't happen.
Do you still do CrossFit workouts, Tom, for strength, or do you have a specific strength routine now?
It's very running specific now. Sort of working on, basically my physio will pass on whatever we need to do strength and conditioning wise, because it's strength and conditioning is so specific, and it's probably one of the most asked questions that I get through my social media is like, oh, what's your strength and conditioning routine? I'm like, I should tell you mine. I've got absolutely nothing to hide from it, but it's probably not going to be right for you. Because my strengths will be different to your strengths, weaknesses different to your weaknesses. Mm-hmm. The areas that I'm trying to build and trying to develop will probably not be the ones that you'll be doing. But yeah, it's very single leg dominant, lots of core, and yeah, just making sure that strength and conditioning doesn't get in the way of running. Running is still the most important element of my training, but the strength and conditioning is a great addition to it. If something has to be cut out from the week, it'll be strength and conditioning, but that very, very rarely happens, because like you said, I'm organized and I know what time I'm running, I know what time I'm going to the gym. Yes, if something happens and we had a leak in the ceiling a couple of weeks ago and that was 3 hours running around like a madman, I'm then not going to say it gets to 11 at night and I've still not been to the gym. I'm not going to be like, oh, okay, well, I'll just go to the gym now till 1:30, because if I'm going to do something, I'll do it properly. I just don't see the point in doing something half-half.
Does your partner do long distance triathlon?
No, she's Olympic distance.
So if you and her were to go head to head, who would win?
So we speak about this quite a lot.
She's not in the room. You can answer it. Don't worry, Tom. You're not going to get a slap around the back end.
You can tell the truth.
She's swimming at the moment. So she is a very, very, very good swimmer. She would destroy me in the water. If it was a, if it was non-drafting,
yeah,
I don't think you would take. I think I'd be just of. I think I'd be quicker on the bike, but I think in the water she'd put serious time into me. But I think I'd make some of it back on the bike, but not.
What's your 1500 meter time for the water?
Oh, I couldn't tell you. Not fast. I don't know if I could. I don't know if I could front crawl at all.
Not really that bad.
There'd be some breaststroke, I think.
Okay, okay. So she's caned you out the water by about 5 minutes then.
Yeah, at least. She put serious time in the water. On the bike, I pulled a bit back, but not that much.
That's and all on, down to the run.
So it'll be down to the wire.
What's your 10K PB?
29
something. What's hers?
34.
Oh, so it's going to be close. Then, we'll be finished.
It's going to be close. We sort of speak about sort of what the distances would have to be for it to be an even race. But if it was in a race, she would destroy me because she'd be out of the water in the front pack.
Yeah, the technique. Yeah,
I would be on my own on the bike.
Yeah. Oh.
We have a lot of these conversations.
So there's been some heated discussions. Like,
you know what? I want a really, really short swim, average size, average distance bike, and then a really long run on it.
An ultra.
That would suit me. I think I would, if it was short, the shorter the race is, the more I'd back her to win. The longer the run is, then I could put 6-7 minutes into her in a 10K. But she would probably put 5 or 6 minutes into me in the swim.
There we go.
I just thought, before we let you go, Tom, because I realise it's getting on, I just want to ask you one more question. I just thought of something. I watched your YouTube doing the three peaks on your treadmill the other day. I mean, so many people say, oh, treadmill, not good for your running. Do you find it affects your running? I mean, you're the first person I've actually met that does a lot of treadmill running. Do you find it screws up your gait pattern and your knees and all that, or do you find it doesn't? Do you find it's all good?
I love a treadmill. I do some really specific hill sessions on a treadmill, but they're slow. So they might be a favorite of mine is 4x20-minute hills. Which is a pretty big incline, but going slowly, sort of ultra race effort.
which is my stupidly fast.
it's like 12K an hour on 15% incline. So it's genuinely nothing crazy.
Yeah.
But is great training for if I'm here and I want to do a specific workout. And what running uphill is brilliant because it hardly causes any muscle damage. Running downhill is what?
The problem.
Yeah. If I did some hard downhill running, or if I was going to do 20-minute reps, climbing some, if you did that at Snowdon, you'd probably do maybe 2 reps and have to run all the way back down to the bottom and then do it again, and you're just going to be wrecked. So using treadmill for that is great. I use my treadmill for recovery running a lot as well, where my muscular system, my aerobic system is fully recovered. Because, funnily enough, your body doesn't all recover at the same point. Your muscular system will recover in however long. Your bones and tendons and ligaments will recover in something else, and then your aerobic system will recover somewhere else. So there'll be points where actually aerobic – so take this evening, for example. This morning, aerobically, hardly did anything, but actually still quite a lot of muscle damage would have gone on. So actually, I want to look after my legs – but I can still work my aerobic system. So what I will do on the treadmill this evening is on the treadmill, so it's super soft, really cushioned, light running on grass, but it's going to be dark outside and I don't really want to run on grass. And I can then put an altitude mask on and I can run it 2,500 meters above sea level. So my aerobic system is getting a really good workout and my legs are recovering at the same time. I think it's brilliant. I wouldn't do all of my running on a treadmill. I'd probably run 3-4 times a week on the treadmill, maybe. And the majority is easy. But yeah, I think it's a great training aid. It's a training tool. And I think the more tools you have in your toolbox, then the better your training can be. At least if you've got that option, you can go to it. But if you don't have that option, you can't go to it.
There we go. And Tom, you've got such a great story as an athlete and how you've built that up. And we could probably talk to you for an hour more of training and other bits as well. But we know we're eating into your very, very valuable time.
Lunchtime,
definitely. Where can the listeners find you? Where can they follow your journey? Is it YouTube? Is it Instagram? Where can they find you?
Yeah, Instagram is probably the best place. Tom Evans Ultra. And then the same on YouTube. And I am in the process of developing something on YouTube. So yeah, watch that space. But yeah, Instagram's probably the best place.
And you're more than happy to answer questions. Not that I want everyone to throw shit your way, but you're more than happy to answer questions, aren't you?
I get back to most people, unless it's weird questions or requests.
I'll not do that.
You've got to stop asking for my used shorts and things.
No, it wasn't me.
Tom, thank you very much for your time. It's been a pleasure today chatting to you, finding a little bit more about your journey from a personal point of view from yourself. Like I said, I'm sure Jack's got loaded more questions, I've got more questions, but thank you very much for the time you've given us today. It's been a pleasure.
No, not at all, guys. Thanks very much. All the best.
And when you're ready to train for that Spartan, Tom, you know where I am, you know where we are. We'll come and train you and we'll get you ready to kick John Alban in his own back garden.
I'm not sure about that, but yeah.
Oh, I don't know. That'd be a story. Could you imagine? We could do that. Two Brits. The Americans would shit themselves. They'd be like, oh no, not two Brits.
There's another one.
Tom, thank you very much.
Brilliant, guys. Thank you very much indeed. Take care. Have a great weekend. Chat to you soon.
See you soon. Bye.